This music makes me happy, Dave. Thank you very much. Yeah, so very, very, very good.
And I love your green shirt.
Thank you very much.
You like mine?
It's very, very nice. It's a dark green. I believe that's what we call it, a dark green. Mike's got the green rocking. That's nice.
Yeah.
Blair, yeah. All our Irishmen are present. Happy St. Patrick's Day to
Alan
everyone.
Alan O'Shartock.
That's right.
At the top of the morning.
So usually it's the other way. Oh, O'Shartock. That's the way. Yeah. welcome to our panel this morning. We love having you here. Let me introduce our panelists to you. These headphones are very strange. I just have to take those off for a moment. Okay. In this hour, we'll start off with our open discussion of issues, and we welcome Alan Shartock. Good morning, sir. How are you? It's very nice to see you.
You shouldn't ask.
I shouldn't ask?
I didn't sleep particularly well.
When's the last time you slept particularly well?
Never.
Yeah.
It was never.
Yeah. There you go. Also, Mike Spain is with us. Talk about luck of the Irish. We have Mike Spain with us.
Oh, that's right. Good morning.
And NYPIRG Legislative Director Blair Horner is with us as well. Very nice to have Blair here.
So let me see if I get this right. Three Irish guys and
yes.
Me?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Whoa.
That's right. 3-1. Just in case you were counting.
Let me get this. Yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah, it is terrific. Yes, it is terrific. We welcome you, no matter what your affiliation is, whatever your lineage may hold, we welcome you to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and it's very nice to have you write to us, because when we do the letters, we actually have something to read. So it's roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post is 3/17/15. And let's get to the topics for today. We have many interesting topics to talk about and to discuss. And I guess we'll begin with, do you want to begin with Schneiderman?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Schneiderman.
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 Right. Staking out a broad vision of ethics reform amid a swirl of other proposals in the Capitol, New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman called for an elimination of all outside jobs for state legislators and the end of a widely criticized system of per diem payments. Good or bad, Blair Horner?
Well, I mean, the more people add to the fray on this fight in Albany, the better. The Attorney General outflanking the governor on this, putting out proposals that at least people could understand. I mean, the governor's speech at New York University earlier this year, where he laid out the argument against outside income and then said as the solution that we should just have them disclose it, stands in sort of pale contrast to the Attorney General's argument made yesterday. So it adds to the fray.
Remind everybody what the Attorney General had to say.
Well, he had a whole package of things. He had the campaign finance solutions, including public financing. He had ethics solution, which, as Joe mentioned, would ban outside income, for example, no more outside employment for lawmakers, similar to what the executive branch has now.
And, of course, raise their pay.
Excuse me? And yes, he had a big he has a proposal to jack up their pay significantly, although the numbers were not clear from the proposal, and to extend their terms of office from 2 to 4 years. So there were a couple of odd proposals.
That would take a constitutional amendment.
Take a constitutional amendment.
That ain't going to happen.
Which would be difficult.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I mean, the argument on the extending their terms is that they would spend more time policymaking, less time campaign fundraising,
but we know that how?
I don't know. The U.S. Senate, which has a 6-year term, they seem to be pretty ferociously fundraising all the time.
You bet.
So I'm not 100% sure if that makes that much of a difference. But yes, there are proposals beyond ethics that dealt with issues of pay for state lawmakers.
But something you said makes so much sense, which is that he was outflanked.
Finally.
No, always, Blair. Always. You're a good man, and you should know it.
This is the Blarney Show, by the way, just in case anyone was listening right now. We're about to find out. I'm sorry, Alan. Go right ahead. Alan O'Shartock, it's your turn.
My mother used to say about my Uncle Jack, always listen for the third sentence, which I loved. No. I think that the big thing here is that Schneiderman is, as you said, outflanking the governor. A lot of people, the big talk in Albany, because people don't have enough to talk about, is whether this governor will run for a third term. On this very radio station, we heard Chris Gibson all but say that he was going to run against Cuomo, run for governor. And Cuomo, I believe, keeps making enough mistakes. Moreland Act, apportionment, you name it. So that he has, and I think one of the worst things he's done in terms of his own political future is the teachers, this war on the teachers, because you're talking about people who really think this is the most salient thing, their jobs in their lives, and you got a million people who are willing to get going on all of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is the second time, though, Schneiderman sort of moved on the governor. Typically, right. Second terms are where the governors start to take some hits. The first term, generally speaking, particularly if they've won in a big victory, they get a wide berth from both the legislature but the other statewide elected officials. But Schneiderman last week also said that his agency, the Attorney General's Office, the Department of Law, would not continue to delete emails after 90 days, which is what the governor had put in place when he was attorney general and now had spread throughout the state government. 1 week later, he puts out his ethics vision, which is, I think, certainly clearer than what the governor was proposing. And so I think we're starting to see a little more, a greater interest in taking on the governor than we saw in the first term.
I may have been sick for a day, but is this still somehow tied to the budget?
Well, the Attorney General argued that the governor should dig in tougher on the budget and extract the reforms that the Attorney General was advancing as part of any ultimate budget deal. The governor has said that he will reject a budget agreement unless it includes significant ethics reform as defined by the governor.
Now, let's remember that the governor's father, Mario, had a thing where, he kept getting embarrassed by late budgets. And I think that Andrew learned at the foot of his father. He doesn't want a late budget. I think he knows that it's the kind of thing that we all get very interested in, and everybody yells and screams about budgets and budgets being on time. People in New York State don't know a lot about their state government, but they sure as hell know about whether or not this thing is delivered on time. And I don't think he wants to get into that. And what I'm worried about is that he's going to take a fall, that he's going to give them what they want, and things will go on as usual.
So you're thinking there'll be a much more watered-down ethics agreement in principle, and things will go back to normal after the budget gets adopted.
You know, these people in the legislature just can't stop themselves from being greedy. They can't. You know, it's as if they should, because if they were able to do that right now, they would be seen as great heroes who had brought democracy and cleared up New York state government. But they just can't stop themselves.
Well, the funny thing is the vast majority of state lawmakers either do not have an outside job or have one where they get a small amount of income, like being an adjunct at a college.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the vast majority, 2/3 of the Senate, 3/4 of the Assembly, are in that category. And yet, for some reason, they're willing to fall on the sword
And
taking out, for the leadership, but it basically is where the money gets made. I mean, I think the governor has put himself in sort of a box, though. He's the one who said he would not agree to an on-time budget if it didn't include ethics. And so it really leaves him very little wiggle room, I would think, in terms of how he's going to proceed. I mean, Mike could be right that they'll just agree to a watered-down settlement and then claim it's historic.
Which he always does. The muscle memory. He always does that.
Well, that's the muscle memory in Albany. But we'll all be there to say, no, that's not so. That is Blarney.
But, Blair, the people know it now. You know, in the beginning he was getting away with it. He'd set up an ethics commission, Jay Cope, which is now Jay Joke, or he would say that I won another victory by doing all this. But you can't fool all the people all the time. And at this stage of the game, that's happening. I mean, Mike's sitting there thinking about what his contribution to the Times Union editorial policy is going to be.
I'm not sure. It looks like on his iPad he's looking at the cartoon section.
Right. Well, it's important just to go over some of the numbers. You know, lawmakers, assembly members and senators make a base salary of $79.5, and they haven't had a raise in, 16 years now. And that is important to them, and that may be good money if you're way upstate, but if you're in one of the boroughs or the metro area of New York, that's supplemental income if you're living outside of poverty. And he's proposing, you know, raises that could be anywhere from $33,000 to $94,000, which is what you said. It's kind of vague exactly what it is. He wants to change the per diems. They get $172 a day for every day they come into session if they're from outside.
Or apparently don't come.
Or don't come, which has been the accusation and the conviction of some.
That's right.
And he wants to just make it that they have to get reimbursed.
Sometimes the conviction keeps you from coming. Right.
Yeah, no, but
that
Joe,
happens.
No, but, you know, Joe does traveling for WAMC, and he goes and talks to people. And when that happens, he gives you a receipt.
Right. They want to do
That's
that.
That's what
right.
they should do. You should have a receipt so that, you know, how many miles you
went. People should be rolling out the red carpet when Joe shows up and handing him a check. That's what my vote is.
Right.
I'm very uncomfortable with this conversation right now.
Getting back to the Schneiderman, he would want public funding, matching funds, you know, which others have called for, other reformers have called for, modeling it after the New York City Council elections, and then, as you said, it's going to be a heavy lift, four terms. He's not getting much traction of this.
I don't think the Republicans are in a great hurry to allow public campaign financing. I just don't think it. And I think while we're talking about that, we should remember that even the Democrats got here under the old system, not a new system where Harry the bartender can run with public money.
Well, I mean, that's always the problem when it comes to reform. Yeah. You're asking the winners of the game to change the rules of the game that got them there in the first place.
And that keeps
is
them
always
there.
Right. And that's right. That's the system
they
don't want to give up.
And that's where it takes enormous courage, and you need to step aside and put the interest of the greater good out there. And that is a challenge.
I second that thought, though.
Now, Mike, we have just a few moments before we have to go to a break. So talk a little bit about Sunshine Week and your editorial.
Well, today we're chiming in also at the Times Union about the whole issue of it being Sunshine Week, which is a national observance of open government, looking for sunshine is the best way to ensure, clean public, government. And today we're kind of chiming in, talking about how the legislature has many bills before it that would strengthen the freedom of information law, require more disclosure, keep the agencies from using all these tactics to delay their response to your freedom of information law requests for public records, because that's what they do. They drag it out to the point that it's, silly. But they're not willing to adopt any of these for themselves. They don't want open disclosure of their own finances and their own communications. And part of that is the governor, while the governor is talking about changing his own email policy, right now it's delete everything at 90 days unless it's involved in an FOIL or involved in a potential court case, and they don't even adhere to that, we've learned in recent weeks. He's talking about adopting the standard, the 7-year standard of the federal government. There's technologically, it's very easy to do. It used to be more expensive and more difficult. Now it is no longer that way. But he wants the legislature to also make their emails stay around for 7 years and be subject to the freedom of information law. And I just can't imagine that'll happen.
I would just add, when dealing with this particular governor, just one little caveat to what you just said. Instead of saying he wants, I would say he says he wants, because I think there's a sort of vast differential. I also want to point out that sitting in this room with us is a man who knows more about this than anybody, and that's Blair Horner, who actually went to work for Attorney General Cuomo at one point and became, in order to provide sunshine to his whole operation. Right, Blair?
Well, that was my job. My job was to put up a website, Project Sunshine.
Sunshine Light.
Sunlight. I should remember the old name of it, but it's been like seven
years
now.
Time,
you know?
Yeah.
And the idea was to put together so people could look at legislation introduced, campaign contributions, lobbying expenditures, and that, to connect the dots. But just to circle back to Mike's point, I mean, I think the governor's talking about the legislative need for greater transparency is basically a public head fake to move the conversation away from his failures on openness, which is to have this 90-day deletion policy. If the governor really wanted to see openness in Albany, he would issue an executive order today saying that that 90-day deletion policy is now overruled and that people have to keep records for 7 years. Lead by example, not by talking.
He could do that with an executive order. He needs no legislative approval. Bingo.
He should just do it.
Because, or as Governor Cuomo often says, because he obviously leads people to say, since he's demanding everybody get rid of it after 90 days, why is he doing that? What's he got to hide?
This is the equivalent of paralysis through analysis, right? We keep talking about reform, but nothing gets done. It'd be nice if someone, in this case, the governor, just took the first step. There's no downside. Just tell the agencies they have to hold it.
How do you know there's no downside?
There's no downside because I know. No, you just told. You just said before I was a Sunlight guy, Alan O'Shartok.
If he is saying get rid of the stuff after 90 days, there's obviously a reason he wants them to get rid of it.
All right, 30 seconds.
I'm done.
To finish your thoughts.
I'm done.
Well, how long is this
act,
governor's
don't
policy?
Talk.
Right, the governor's policy of 90-day deletions, was that traced back before he got there, or is that his own policy?
This is primarily his policy, and it goes into effect since 2013, according to internal memoranda that I've seen from agencies.
Wow.
Whoa. All right, we are out of time for this break, but we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to get some news, and we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll continue our conversation on our roundtable panel after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. It's the 17th of March, otherwise known as St. Patrick's Day, and we welcome you. On Thursday, we'll be celebrating St. Joseph's Day.
That's right. Equal time.
That's right.
The St. Joseph's Day parade in the Italian neighborhoods. That's right.
Absolutely.
Everybody takes an aspirin.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Let's go. We have a letter, and then we'll go into other stuff.
Hello, panel. Would you all say that the proposal for the legislature to give up outside income apply to just lawyers and those who might have a conflict of interest or all of them? I mean, what if there were individuals in the legislature who have regular jobs that have nothing to do with politics? For example, what if there's a doctor, an architect, a pharmacist, an engineer, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker? Okay, just a little joke with the last three. But seriously, should people in these professions have to give up their jobs or businesses as well? Blair Horner.
Well, that's what the Attorney General says. He says, including the candlestick maker, no one can have outside income.
And that's why this is going to be a heavy lift.
Heavy is the word that comes to mind. It's sort of like the heaviest thing you can imagine.
As John McLaughlin might have said, wrong. The reason this is important is because nobody's immune. If you own a pharmacy, yes, you can be a pharmacist, but somebody's going to come to you because they say, hey, that guy's going to be in the pharmacy. I can have a connection to him. I'll give him a little bit of business, and he'll give me a little something back. I'm not pointing to anybody, although there is one pharmacist, but I'm saying that's a
There's
pretty
a
good example.
Too,
that's an example of the way it works.
I didn't know that. Okay. Sorry.
And it should apply to the executive branch in terms of book royalties.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's interesting.
If there are any book royalties.
That's right. In advance, for example. Mm-hmm. Just hypothetically.
I mean, if you're a prisoner, you can't write a book and get the, in the system.
Well, I don't know that you need to compare an elected official with someone who's been convicted of a crime and is in jail.
Oh, I just did. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
But if you're in the House of Representatives, you can't get advanced book royalty because former Speaker Jim Wright got into trouble for that. And why? Because a bunch of lobbyists.
But there are limits. You can have some outside income.
Yeah, you can have outside income, but you can't have advanced royalties on a book because lobbyists will go out and buy your book, and then that's the way they ingratiate themselves. That's right.
Well, how many? Has anybody been keeping track on how many of books Andrew has sold?
I think the last count I heard was about 3,000.
Yeah, 3,000.
And he got upwards to $750,000 advance book royalty for that, even though he's not allowed to have an outside job.
That seemed like maybe for the publisher that was a bad investment.
Well, if he runs for president, that book will be more valuable.
The parent corporation of the publisher is a company you might have heard of, News Corp.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. We know about that.
Yes. Well, there you go.
Speaking of News Corp.
Yeah, what about it?
Let's go to Beebe.
Yes.
Oh, BB.
So on the final day of his reelection campaign, Benjamin Netanyahu said that as long as he serves as Prime Minister of Israel, there will not be an independent Palestinian nation. His declaration marks the second time in a month that Netanyahu has chosen to confront Washington directly, first by opposing in a speech before Congress President Obama's possible deal to try to curtail Iran's nuclear ambitions, and now by opposing a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which Secretary of State John Kerry spent 9 months pursuing.
Well, you know, I said this is what was up when Netanyahu and the Iranian situation said, basically, we can never trust them. So therefore, we can never make a deal with them. And that logic, I said at the time, also applies to all of the rhetoric surrounding the two-state solution. If you can't trust them, you can't make a deal with them. And that is what his position always was, I believe. But now at least he's saying it.
I'm despairing over the Middle East. I mean, I don't see a positive trajectory coming out of any of the news that I read in the Middle East. And arguing that there won't be a two-state solution will, I think, only embolden the most ferocious hardliners among the Palestinians. Because what's the point of negotiating if nothing's going to happen? So things get more scary over there.
I mean, when you think about it, look, we all know it. We're naive to think that there aren't some of these guys over there who want to push Israel into the sea. It's disgusting. It's awful. It's the way they are. But you can have a check on them the way you're doing it now or with a two-state solution. In other words, they're not going away. And to say we're never going to try to resolve this thing because of them is crazy.
Yeah, to rule it out. Just to rule it out completely, it just means that there is no negotiation. There is no chance for a equality-based pact that his predecessors have worked for and have
died for.
And it's election time over there, and it's playing well, and he's using scare tactics. It's not something that we're unfamiliar with. It's what happens every time there's a presidential election here. People scare you and want you to be worried about security, and it makes you vote for them.
But in Israel, there's proportional representation, otherwise known as PR. There are so many parties that this resolution could be, as we all know by now, that Netanyahu could lose to Herzog
and still win.
and still win because the president of the country asks one, like the queen would, ask one or the other to try to form a government. And they have a certain amount of time to do that in. I love it. Blair, even before you got here, there was an elderly man named George Hallett. And George Hallett, I think, was the Citizens Union at the time. He wasn't. And he had one great thing he wanted to do with the New York State Legislature, and that's institute proportional representation. And these guys were the only ones who would endorse candidates. So they say preferred candidates. Right. So everybody wanted to be on his good side. So he'd go around with a petition. He'd get everybody to sign it for proportional representation, if you're following this story. He would get everybody to sign this resolution in the legislature, but it never happened because they weren't giving up their jobs all that easily. You see, don't you see?
Well, but back to Israel.
Well, the point was, for exactly the same reason, you know, things would be a mess. Democracy is never easy.
No, it's just, again, just the despair part of this for me. It seems like radicals are being emboldened by all of the moves, either in Israel or in Iraq or in Syria or even in Iran. I mean, the effort by the U.S. Senate to basically sabotage the president's negotiations with the Iranians, I mean, what is that going to do, right? That's not going to make it easier to make a deal. I'm not close enough to the action. I'm a state guy, so I'm not close enough to the action to have an opinion on whether or not what the president's talking about or whatever he's doing is a good or bad deal. But it is. I don't see the silver lining in these dark clouds.
Before we move on to another subject, so with the election day upon us, does anybody want to predict?
Well, the polls are showing it's pretty close, right?
It's showing it's close, and that that Netanyahu is being edged out by a slim margin, but a fairly firm margin.
But Netanyahu does this Hail Mary pass right now, so we don't really know whether that's going to make a difference in terms of the security. Somebody's looking at their family. Look, in this country, security has always come first.
Trump's
always.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, he threw the pass. Obviously, he's got advice. Somebody's telling him to do that. I wouldn't want to make a prediction. I would predict that there are an awful lot of people there who are quite angry at Netanyahu, but I don't know what that means.
We have a couple of letters on this subject. We'll get to those, and then we'll take a quick break and come back and move on to some other issues as well.
Rick says, now that we have greatly reduced our need for oil from the Middle East, is there any reason why we care about the atrocities there than those happening in Africa? Our politicians and media give vastly greater attention and coverage to the atrocities of the Middle East than those in Africa. All right, and Joseph says, let's hope the Israelis wake up and dump this guy. He has used our Congress as cheerleaders, a la Adelson, and 47 senators were so smitten by his disrespect of Obama, the President of the United States, that they violated their oath and broke the Logan Act. Is America stronger and more respected as a result of our friend Netanyahu? And that's from Joe. And then I guess that's it. Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and continue and finish up with a few more issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Saratoga Bridges, Ballston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org. Underground Railroad History Project, 14th Public History Conference, Breaking Free, Civil War, Emancipation, and Beyond, April 17th through 18th at Russell Sage College, Troy, April 19th at the Myers Residence in Albany, undergroundrailroadhistory.org. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York, davidsonbrothers.com. Support comes from Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com. Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostAndBeam.com. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
A defiant letter from Senate Republicans to Iran's leaders is complicating international negotiations to end a 12-year impasse by imposing strict limits on Iran's nuclear program in exchange for easing economic sanctions. As U.S. and Iranian officials began a week-long push to complete the outline of an agreement, Tehran repeatedly demanded an explanation of the letter written by freshman Senator Tom Cotton and signed by 47 of the 54 Republican senators, according to a senior Obama administration official.
So it's now giving the Obama administration cover. What they did was they gave an excuse to Kerry if these negotiations break down. You know, from a political perspective, it's just weirder than anyone can imagine to me.
Hmm.
You don't know.
I don't know. What do you make of it? I mean, it's
well,
a head scratcher.
A head scratcher.
Well, I mean, you know, it's all about politics, right? I mean, this isn't really about, I mean, they want to sabotage the president at every cost, and whatever the cost.
It's so stupid.
And I mean, they don't want to deal with Iran, right? So I don't know what the end game is for these
guys. Well, the end game was to get Obama.
Right.
The end game was to get Obama.
Yeah, but didn't they figure out that at some point that it could complicate?
No,
it could complicate talks. It could complicate relations. It could complicate.
Care.
Yeah, okay. There you
they
go.
Don't care whether Americans have health care. They don't care about it. The whole idea is to dirty Obama. When they're getting on a plane, and so many of these guys are now saying, you know, don't look at me. You know, there were some very good Republicans who said, I'm not touching this thing. The chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, for example, said, I'm not signing this thing. So they're on the way to the plane, and somebody puts in front of them a piece of paper, and he says, yeah, sure. And they sign it without thinking about the implications of this thing.
That's the most charitable interpretation, Alan.
The most charitable.
Yeah, it is.
They didn't know what they were signing.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the most charitable and sort of in some ways the scariest, right? That they would just sign onto a letter to the head of Iran. Like they wouldn't read the letter, Dear Ayatollah. That would have gotten my attention right off
Dear
the bat.
Dear Mr. Mueller.
I mean,
would
it's
like
really?
The US
I don't believe that for a second.
You know, I was in Washington when the Civil Rights Act, the big one, was passed. And the guy I was working for was a terrific fellow. He told me, called me on the phone, and told me to make some cocktails. Put them in a bottle. Put the bottle in a brown envelope and bring them to him on the floor. And you would see him walking up to guys, putting his arm around them, pulling them off into a little alcove, coming out, and looking up at me, smiling. Look, strange things go on in the United States Congress.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to everyone who's listening, if you got someone handed you a letter that was written to the head of Iran, you wouldn't read it? I really have a hard time believing
that's the truth,
no matter what they're telling people now.
I don't know that these guys read everything. I'll tell
you
that right now.
Yeah, but Dear Ayatollah? I mean, come on already, right? I mean, it's not like it's like Joe Smith, you know, or Joe Donahue even, as celebrity as he is, where people roll out the red carpet when he shows
up. Yeah, there you go. Now, so the point of this article, too, is that, look, it's just not us. We were in negotiations as part of the Security Council. We've been negotiating as a group. And not only are we damaging relations with Iran, but we're also damaging the relations that we have with the other Western countries that we're negotiating with.
Yeah. I mean, the most amazing thing to me is that they let a freshman senator who only had one term of being in Congress behind him, that's the Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, lead the way. I mean, do they have no other leadership in that upper house that they let the newest guy on the block kind of define
Iraq
how
war
they go?
Veteran.
Yes. Well, then he must know everything.
Well, but we were wondering, we were talking about this last week and this week, which is, you know, did they put him up to it too? Yeah, let Tom do it. Hey, Tom, why don't you do this?
Well, he has a lot to gain.
Now, let's just remember that they thought they had a great victory with the Netanyahu speech to Congress. I watched it. It was incredibly effective. Introducing Elie Wiesel and all the rest during that time. So they thought, I think some of them thought, this would be an appropriate follow-up to their great victory. It would extend the tentacles of the victory. Doesn't that make a little sense to you guys?
Well, I mean, it depends on the audience you're playing to, right? If you're playing to
the American people are the audience in this case.
Well, I mean, to the base of the party, then it's very effective.
No, but I think the American people were, I mean, I talked to a lot of people who thought that the Netanyahu speech was extremely effective and that they really liked it.
Yeah, I was thinking more about the letter, sort of following up, you know.
And what was interesting is it went away. In other words, it was there, he gave a great speech, and then it wasn't there anymore. It was gone. So it didn't have this lasting effect that they thought. And to me, there's a possibility that what they were trying to do was extend that aura.
Well, I think you nailed it. I mean, what this may do, it may cause the president, well, it certainly has embarrassed the president and the administration, and it may cause these talks to break down completely with Iran that have been going on for a couple of years now. And that's all they really want. They'll have achieved that, and it doesn't matter what it does.
Right. Yeah. To me, the craziest end. What's the end game of this, right? So you blow up the agreement with Iran. Then what, right? I mean, what happens then, right? They just go on their merry way and create an atomic explosion.
Well, we continue to have extremely harsh economic sanctions against Iran, and other countries want to lift those. They want trade with Iran. It's a rich country, and everyone is mad at everybody.
Yeah, well, now you bring me back to my despair thing. Joe, save us. There must be something in your list of issues that we could talk about that would sort of make people feel better about what's going on in the world.
Oil prices fell to six-year lows on Monday.
I want an investigation.
Of concerns that a glut.
I want an investigation.
Well, that's manipulation by the Saudis from the Middle East.
By the oil companies. I want an investigation why in my hometown, I believe it's 30 cents higher for gas than it was a couple of months ago. If, in fact, the price is going down of the barrel of oil, it would seem that intuitive that the price of gas would continue to go down. But no, I think what happened is a bunch of, execs decided, enough of this now. Well, I want an investigation.
I'm with Alan. Whatever you want to investigate, I'm with you on this. I mean, you're right, though. The prices have just gone up recently, significantly.
They are.
And the theory, at least in the article, is they'll go back down again, but we'll see. I mean, this is typically the time of year, I guess, post-winter, when heating bills go down, there's more of a glut on the market.
Exactly.
And the Saudis are pumping more oil into the market to undermine the U.S.
The quote of the article...
Russians. Because the U.S. asked them
It's incredible that they say that the Saudis can pump a barrel of oil for a couple of dollars. I mean, that's how abundant it is over there. We have to spend all that money to, use fracking and get this hard, get down into the deep into the earth to get the oil out. They don't have that problem, and they can undercut us by flooding the market.
Bhushan Bari, who is an analyst at IHS Energy, a business information company in Washington, says, quote, "A new math for oil has emerged." This was my favorite quote. "A new math for oil has emerged. The new math is the mix of variables that shape the pace and level of U.S. oil production, as well as investment in high-cost sources of supply." Who knows what that means?
Well, they always
one.
Have an answer. Like,
sounds like calculus.
Right. It's a new math. We made it up, and it benefits us.
Well, Constantine has it right. He says, "Yet prices are up about 30 cents." Then he says a profound thing. He says, "Right on, Alan."
That is profound. So,
people are using more oil while we're dealing with global warming. So, by the way, just to sort of rain on the parade, I guess maybe that's not the right
thing. Well, flooding, that's another aspect of this. Flooding the market with cheap oil like the Saudis are doing will undercut the move towards, more expensive but much better for the environment alternatives, and it will lead to fewer people getting electric cars, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, so, I was sort of hoping that this show was going to be more upbeat.
There is upbeat news. There is that good story about Vladimir Putin has shown up, and he's fine.
That's right. He was gone for 10 days. We didn't know where he was.
What was he
doing? Out of the public eye for 10 days. He canceled a whole bunch of meetings and was not seen or heard from in 10 days. And yesterday he showed up, and there wasn't an angle that wasn't covered by a camera to make sure there was no smoke, no mirrors, that it was
wasn't
indeed,
a hologram.
That right, that it was indeed Vladimir Putin.
Well, there was some fear that he had been pushed out by the Politburo or whatever they call it.
The way they used to do it.
Yeah, the way they used to do it, like they did Nikita Khrushchev.
And the way Khrushchev did Stalin.
Yeah, the way it's usually had been done. But evidently, he looked well. He looked tanned and rested.
Well, thank God.
Yeah. Maybe he went to visit Mikoyan. Mm. You guys don't remember him at all. You're just so young.
You're right, I don't. All right. We are out of time, but
I'm off.
We're out of time. Let me thank all of our wonderful panelists this morning. Alan, Mike, and Blair. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you.
And Barbara wants us to know the good news is that that the number of uninsured for health care reaches a new 40-year low.
That's right.
All right. So there's your good news.
There you go.
We'll end with that.
As long as the Supreme Court doesn't mess it up.
See, you got to rain on your own parade.
No, it's like Debbie Downer.
All right. Thank you for being here. We'll be back tomorrow for another Roundtable panel. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.